Saram, dear listeners, and welcome once again to Vahini Satsang. We continue our journey through the beautiful stream of Sandeha Nivarini, the lovely volume that Bhagwan has gifted us, wherein he has answered the questions occurring in the minds of the seekers. Sandeha Nivarini is the second book that Bhagwan wrote way back in the 50s, in the late 50s. Even as Bhagwan was writing chapters of Prema Vahini for the Ashram Monthly magazine, Sanatana Sarathi, Bhagwan simultaneously started writing for Sandeha Nivarini, the other series that started in Sanatana Sarathi, and Professor Kasturi, the biographer of Bhagwan's life, later on compiled these series of articles, and that is how we have these beautiful books, beautiful guides, beautiful testimonies of Bhagwan's love for each one of us. In the previous session, we started with chapter 9 of Sandeha Nivarini. Like we do in every chapter, we have split the chapter into various segments so that we can assimilate what Bhagwan is telling us in small, small doses. And we spent 2 weeks in segment 9.1, and the discussion is about action, destiny, karma. So today we will move on to the next segment, segment 9.2. So let's listen to what Bhagwan has given us in this segment, and then we will pray to him to try to decipher what Bhagwan is telling us and how we can implement that in our daily life for our spiritual growth. So here is segment 9.2.
So Swami, we should not sit with folded hands placing all burdens on destiny, isn't it?
What is important is you should act according to your capacity and leave the result of the action to destiny. It is wrong to desist from the appropriate karma, placing reliance on destiny. If you do so, even destiny will slip out of your hands. Whoever he be, he must engage himself in karma.
Yes, yes, Swami. In the Gita also, Krishna tells Arjuna, even I do karma. The universe cannot go on if I desist from karma. And so, if you withdraw from it, how can you realize the results of your karma? Karma is Purusha Lakshana, the hallmark of men.
You are silly. Is there a different hallmark for women? Karma is Prakriti Lakshana. All beings, men or women, trees or animals, worms, insects and so on, have to do karma. Everything in the universe is bound by this law. Everything that we experience, be it favorable or unfavorable, is its result. Therefore, karma is the characteristic of Prakriti. Do not refer to it as Purusha Lakshana. Paramatma is the one and only Purusha. Prakriti is all Shakti, feminine. You are all not Purushas, remember.
But Swami, there is distinction between men and women in nature, and also in their actions and experiences. One cannot help but accept this difference. In this scenario, how can we say that all are feminine?
My boy, you may imagine it to be so, guided by your natural reason. But the reality is not that. All this is just secular experience. It is superficial and far from the fundamental truth. This is simply play acting, mere impersonation. In some plays, men take the role of women. Sometimes women enact the role of men in plays. Are they therefore men? All these are roles assumed for the drama of life. However, since Prakriti is completely suffused with femininity, all the actors, no matter what role they play, are feminine, not masculine. The genuine Purusha is only one, that is Shiva, the Atma. The Atma is immanent in everyone, but for this reason alone, all cannot be deemed masculine. The Prakriti theatre is like a girls' school where all the roles of the play are taken up by girls. Shakti, which is feminine, puts on all these parts, but do not take the drama as real, my dear fellow.
Swami, even after hearing all this, the nature of the world remains an enigma to me. When one side is seen, it strikes me as real. When the other side is presented, it strikes me as unreal. Nothing is definite.
That is exactly the nature of mithya. It means that the world is mithya. It is neither satya nor asatya. It is neither real nor unreal. You are born in mithya. You are enmeshed in it. And so you cannot distinguish this from that, the satya from the asatya.
Then, setting aside this discussion of mithya, tell me, Swami, about that satya, that Purusha, whoever he is.
The Purusha has neither birth nor death. He undergoes no change. He is Chit Swarupa and Jnana Swarupa. He is wisdom. Dharma or codes of social conduct are not of his nature. So he is not Dharma Swarupa. The Jnana, which is his nature, does not change, is not corrected or supplemented from time to time. It is eternal wisdom. Light is its nature, and so it does not admit a dot of darkness. The sun does not have effulgence added to it from the world it illumines. It will emit splendor whether there are worlds or not. Similarly, the innate nature never changes. The Purusha is self-luminous. He is always the object of knowledge. He cognizes all vrittis or mutations of the chitta or consciousness. The chitta is parinami. It changes and evolves. But the Purusha is modificationless, aparinami, unevolved. The Purusha is wisdom itself, which never changes. No vyapara or activity can affect him. Even when unmanifested, effulgence is his nature. The seed in the soil is the unmanifested form of the tree. The tree is the manifested form of the seed. This change from the seed to tree and tree to seed shows that activity of the Shakti in the seed. This is Parinama. But the Purusha is unchanging, unaffected. He is the seer. He is completely apart from Prakriti. No deed can diminish his glory nor exhaust his personality.
So that is segment 9.2 of Sandeha Nivarini. If we go to the initial part of this segment, it starts off with the Bhakta saying, Swami, you are saying that we cannot place all the burdens on destiny. And that's when Bhagwan says, yes, one has to act as per one's capacity and then leave the result of the action to destiny. Bhagwan clearly says that it is wrong to desist from the appropriate karma by simply placing reliance on destiny. And Swami says, if you do that, even destiny will slip out of your hands. And that's the reason why whoever one may be, one must be engaged in karma. We did spend some time discussing this in the previous segment. And after this, the Bhakta says, yes, yes, Swami, in the Gita also, Krishna says that even I do karma, the universe cannot go on if I desist from karma. In Bhagavad Gita, in chapter 3, the 22nd shloka, reads as, Name parthasti kartavyam trishu lokeshu kinchana nana vyaptam avaptyam. Nana vaptam avaptavyam varta evacha karmani, which means there is no duty for me to do in all the three worlds, O Partha. Krishna says there is no obligation on me to do anything. There is nothing that I have to do to gain anything or to attain anything. I have no duty. I have no reason or compulsion or obligation to act or work. Yet, I am engaged in prescribed duties. This is what Krishna says in the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna. And that's when Krishna adds, and so, if you withdraw from action, O Arjuna, how can you realize the results of your karma when someone like me, who has absolutely no compulsion, no necessity to work, is also engaged in action? How can you desist from action? And if you desist from action, how can you get the results of your karma? And that's when Bhagwan, through the voice of the Bhakta, says here, karma is Purusha Lakshana. Karma is the hallmark of men. That's what the Bhakta says. So Swami, karma is the hallmark of men. And of course, the answer that Bhagwan gave, which you heard, Bhagwan goes on to describe about how there is only one Purusha, and then talks about how everything in nature is actually feminine. There is no one who is truly masculine in creation. Everything is just Shakti. Everything is feminine. But before that, I thought we can spend some time contemplating on this beautiful act of the divine, the beautiful fact that the divine acts. There is no reason for the divine to act. Name parthasti kartavyam trishu lokeshu kinchana. In all the three worlds, there is no need for me to work, but still I work, even though I have nothing to gain out of it. The divine is contented, is full within himself, yet the supreme person works ceaselessly and he adheres to the laws and processes of nature. And if the divine becomes idle and he shuns actions altogether, the world will come to a standstill and the world will derive wrong lessons. Krishna says, the world will derive wrong lessons from me. And that is not healthy at all. That is not desirable at all. In human life, the life of an individual is always interwoven with society. And that is the reason why none can take a selfish or an independent stand. What is good and necessary for the society should alone follow from the individual. And that's why Krishna says, if because of my inward sufficiency I prefer to be inactive, that would be detrimental to the society's welfare. So Arjuna, activity should be an efficient means, not the least any hindrance to your fulfillment, whatever you want to achieve, you have to act. You cannot put down the bow and say, I will not act. Everyone has to act. Even I am acting. Even I am engaged in continuous activity. In fact, you know, hearing the words of Krishna and looking at the life of Bhagwan, this is what continuously occurs to you. How Bhagwan was ceaselessly engaged in activity even though there was no any necessity for him to work. For 60, 70 years to come every morning for darshan. Every day call people for interview. To do something for 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 2 months, 3 years, 5 years, fine. But to do it for 65, 70 years, every day come for darshan morning and evening. Never miss. Every day spend some time with the devotees. Every day listen to people's problems. Every day. With a lot of patience, forgive them and encourage them, goad them, yet again talk to them, yet again inspire them, and ensure that they walk and they grow and they progress on the spiritual path. Work, work and work. Even though there is nothing that he has to gain out of it. There is nothing that Bhagwan had to gain from anything that he did all his life. When he took the human form, when here it is said that action is the hallmark of every person. When the Lord took the human birth, he showed that. In every single moment, when he was stretching himself so thin to work, can any one of us find a reason to not persevere, to not fill ourselves with inspiration and zeal, with energy and work for society? In fact, I'm reminded of the Patha Mandiram days, the time when the old Mandir got constructed in the 1945-46 era. Bhagwan was staying in Karnam Subbamma's house since he declared his divinity in Urvakonda. And with time, as more people started coming to Subbamma's house to see Bhagwan, to have his darshan and to watch the miracles, in those days every moment was filled with miracles and leelas, which were Nidarshan, as Swami says, which were to awaken people of the immense fortune that they have been blessed with. Subbamma's house became insufficient for the visiting people. And there were also all kinds of people who were commenting on Subbamma, because in that period the caste system was so prevalent and people had all these prejudices with respect to caste. And since Subbamma belonged to the Brahmin caste and Bhagwan was not a Brahmin, and they cast aspersions on Subbamma and said, how can you permit a non-Brahmin to stay in your house? A lot of people strongly objected to Bhagwan visiting the kitchen of Karnam Subbamma. And so Bhagwan did not want Karnam Subbamma to face any ridicule or negativity from people around. And so Bhagwan stopped entering the kitchen of Karnam Subhama. Bhagwan would stand outside and talk to Karnam Subhama Garu. Even then, some of the jealous villagers of Puttaparthi, they could not tolerate the fame and the growth of people coming to Puttaparthi. They could not understand, digest how so many people are coming to see this boy who has just declared that he is the Sai Baba come again. It was very difficult for them to accept. And they continuously were creating problems for Bhagwan. The Lord has to go through all this. The Lord, in His immense compassion, first of all donned a human frame. That itself is a huge sacrifice when you think about the limitations that the unlimited has to put Himself in when He dons a human frame and to live with beings who are so ignorant of who He is. And these beings put Him into trouble, create problems for Him, don't allow Him to stay, don't allow Him to eat. Someone said that we should find a place for Bhagwan in Bukkapatnam. But the people of Bukkapatnam refused to give Swami a place. Can you believe it? That is how difficult it was for the avatar Himself. Someone said, no, if this boy comes here, he's a magician, our village might get into problem. When people in Puttaparthi did not understand Swami, people in Bukkapatnam had problems if Bhagwan stayed there. And so Bhagwan moved into some caves along the Chitravati River. There were some caves in the hills surrounding the Chitravati River near Jankampalli, and Bhagwan went and stayed in the caves. Probably for 6 months, he would just come out for short breaks, but he would just spend time in the cave. Can we even imagine what Bhagwan has gone through when he took on the human form? There are some records when Bhagwan wrote to some Bangalore devotees, I am staying on the hill, I have not yet gone to the village. And villagers slowly figured out that Swami is staying in the hills, and they would come to the cave to see Swami, but if they would step inside the cave, then they would be driven out by what they thought were snakes. They didn't know what was happening. It was during this period when Bhagwan was staying in the caves that there was one saint in Kuttacheru, which is about 5 kilometers from Puttaparthi, and he thought that this boy is a very bright boy and he seems to have some powers. It'll be nice if I make him my disciple, I will become famous. And it was at this time that Subhama and Isharama, they got so worried that Swami will be taken away by this saint. And that is when Subhama quickly acted and invited Bhagwan to use a vacant piece of land on the western bank of Chitravati and stay there in a temporary residence. That land belonged to the Karnam family, to the Karnam Subhama family, and they had a small hut built there. Bhagwan began living in the hut, but his troubles were far from over. Bhagwan's powers, Bhagwan's leelas hit the stubborn egos of some people, and somehow these people thought that we should put an end to Bhagwan's life. And we know how the miscreants set fire to that little hut in which Bhagwan was sleeping. And we know how, just like it had happened in Dwapara Yuga, a sudden downpour that fell only on top of the hut put out that flames. On another occasion, some people bound Bhagwan to a boulder and they threw him down the hill. Can you imagine all these things that the avatar went through? There was no need for the avatar to go through all of these turmoil. The avatar could have achieved whatever he wanted to achieve from whichever plane. He doesn't have to take a human form, but the avatar took a human form out of his immense love, and then he went through all this. People in their limited minds, putting his physical body into so much of pain. At that point in time, almost the entire village was against Bhagwan and Bhagwan's leelas. Some elders said that no, Swami should not say, stay in the hut. And it was at this time that Kamalamma and Subbamma, the wives of the Karnam of the village, they decided that we should construct a temple and we should have Bhagwan stay there. Their husband wanted to construct a temple and give it to the needy and poor. And for this, they had actually allocated some land. Unfortunately, their husband died early. And both these wives, Subbamma and Kamalamma, thought, why don't we use this land for Bhagwan? Anyway, our husband wanted that it should be used for a sacred purpose. And the same day, a document writer got a sale deed drafted, and Subbamma and Kamalamma went in a bullock cart to Bukkapatnam to register the land. Swami did not go with them. Swami blessed them. The registration of that land was done at the Bukkapatnam sub-registrar's office. And in the evening, when Subbamma and Kamalamma returned with the documents and gave them to Bhagwan, Swami blessed them with Padmaskaram, and then Swami assured them, saying, I will protect you forever. And the following day, 21st July 1945, Karnam Subbamma called Tunga Gangappa and others who were known to Swami and who were contemporaries of Swami, and she told them, I have given this land to Satyam. All of you should help him to construct a small house. And all these youngsters who were Bhagwan's childhood friends, and they used to go to that small hill located on the other side of the Chitravati river, and they used to pick up wood, timber for the construction of the house, and they would bring this wood in bullock carts. The walls of the first house were constructed with granite stones and clay, devoid of any plastering. The roof consisted of wooden angles overlaid with country straw. Two villagers, Chakala Subbanna and Boya Chinna Subbanna, did all the work. And when the house was ready, Subbamma organized a small function and she fed all the villagers. And with this, now that there was a place for Bhagwan to stay and to talk to devotees, Bhagwan's popularity began to grow. And along with that, the opposition to him also began to grow. Now devotees started coming from Bengaluru. And these devotees said, Swami, we have to build a nice building for you. And all of them, they came to Puttaparthi. They stayed for about 4 days. And they laid the foundation for a mandir. It was on the Janmashtami festival that the house that was built, the temporary house that was built, was demolished. And the construction of the mandir was started in the same place. And Kamalamma recalls how when the foundation work of the first mandir began, someone found in the excavated land a lingam, and Swami immediately took that lingam away, saying, know that lingam, this lingam belongs to me. And Swami said, many sages and saints had done penance in this place, and hence this is a very sacred place. It is charged with spiritual energy. No wonder Swami had chosen that place to be the Path Mandir, the first Mandir, the first abode of Sri Satya Sai Avatar. And the construction of the Mandir began with many devotees wholeheartedly participating, with the devoted feeling that the Mandir was their own. Tirumal Rao, the engineer, engaged the services of a skilled mason from Bengaluru. Throughout the 4 months or so of the construction, Tirumal Rao, he continued to provide resources as well as his expertise. Ankamma of Alsur from Bengaluru had the construction material transported to the site in lorries. A businessman from Penukonda, 1 hour from Puttaparthi, who had a lorry, also offered to transport material. But his lorry tires, unfortunately, were worn out. Narasimha Rao Naidu, another devotee, arranged for a few new tires to be sent to Penukonda, following which the material was transported to Puttaparthi. We are talking about 1945. India had not even attained independence. That happened 2 years later. Narasimha Rao Naidu provided Mangalore tiles and Kadapa slabs for the roofing and flooring respectively. Thiruvenkatasamy Mudaliar arranged for the cement. And Bhagwan was guiding each stage of the construction. Bhagwan was all the time on the move. Even as Bhagwan was looking after the progress of the construction, Bhagwan was also traveling. Always energetic. He was visiting the houses of devotees in Bengaluru, in Mysuru. And after a while, Bhagwan stopped his travels and gave complete time for the progress of the Mandir. Bhagwan himself supervised the work. It was not long before the Mandir, measuring 20 feet by 10 feet with traditional Mangalore tile roofing, became ready. This was the first one built for Bhagwan, Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba of Puttaparthi. And the devotees wanted Swami's permission to hold a festive occasion to inaugurate the Mandir. And Swami agreed and guessed the date of the inauguration of this Mandir. It was on Vaikuntha Ekadashi day, the 14th of December 1945. And we are now in the month of December. This is December 10th, 2020. And it's really Bhagwan's will that we are discussing about such a sacred event that happened in this month, way back in 1945. 75 years ago, the devotees of Madras and Bangalore, they were blessed to be at Puttaparthi a fortnight before the inauguration ceremony of the Mandir, and Bhagwan would supervise the building work and plan every aspect of the inauguration function. Swami started the preliminary preparations. He started decorating the Mandir. There were a few young men in the village and from the devotees who had come from Chennai, from Bangalore. They climbed the ladders, they hung the decorations and the photographs on the walls. And they saw how Swami himself climbed the ladder and he did the decorations. And Swami would always say, Sai is ever willing and ever ready to help and assist at all times and at all places. It is this that gives joy to Sai. The Lord does not have to act. As we discussed before, there is no need for the divine to perform any duty. But Swami is telling here, Sai is ever willing and ever ready to help and assist at all times and at all places. Why? Because it is this that gives joy to Sai. And through this, Bhagavan is teaching us what should be our approach to life. When I read that message of Bhagavan in Sandhya Nivarani, as I told you before, I cannot but think about Bhagavan's life when we read how Krishna said that even though I have no obligation to work in all the three worlds, but still I work. The arrangements for the inauguration of the first mandir became complete with the flower merchants from Bangalore donating a carpet for the hall. And the momentous day of the inauguration dawned. Bhagwan arrived from the Karnam's house in procession. There was a musical troupe. Swami was seated on a florally decorated palanquin. There were idols of the two Sais, Shirdi Sai and Sathya Sai, on either side. Bhagwan placed his hands on both the idols. There was this beautiful procession. Bhagwan installed the two idols in the main prayer hall. There were also photographs of Sathya Sai and pictures of Shirdi Sai and other deities with lamps on either side of the altar. The group from Bangalore was led by Savitramma, and she prepared a grand feast on the inaugural day. Bhagwan touched that food before it was served to all, and the contents immediately increased in quantity, and there was enough food for everyone who came for the celebration. And again, the local people just could not tolerate how so many people are so drawn to this boy. And that is the reason why there were people who were continuously trying to do mischief. Devotees would bring different kind of sweets as prasadam and keep them in front of the altar for distribution after the worship. On the inauguration day, when prasadam was being distributed at the end of the function, Bhagwan took a particular plate aside and asked that it should not be distributed. And then Swami told Tirumal Rao, the engineer, that there was poison in the laddus that were given. Imagine, there were people who had given poison laddus. But Swami, by a wave of his hand, he extracted the poison and requested that the plate be buried in a pit. And everyone was witness to this amazing act of the divine. If you are with Sai, you don't have to worry. You will only go high. On the inauguration day, 14th of December 1945, Bhagwan went to the rear of the building. There was some open space there. Swami went to a corner, he placed his palm on the ground, and immediately a spring rose from that spot. It was fresh water. Swami said, "Dig a well here." And that very spot of water became the source of drinking water in the entire village. This well never dried up, even in summer, unlike the other village wells, which would go dry. The women folk of the village would collect water from this well continuously throughout the year. And Tirumal Rao, a few days before the inauguration, became very sick. He had severe stomachache. Pushpakanti, his wife, took him to Madras, where he was scheduled for a surgery at a nursing home. The surgeon requested her to sign a paper exonerating him if the complicated life-endangering operation failed. But the wife refused to sign and brought Tirumal Rao back to Puttaparthi, saying that if he has to die, it's better he merges at Bhagwan's feet in Puttaparthi and not in Chennai. And Bhagwan asked Tirumal Rao to sleep beside him that night at the Karnam's house. And the next morning, when Tirumal Rao found that he was completely fine, then he saw that His bed and clothes were full of blood stains. Bhagwan had operated on him during the night and he had no clue. There were knife and other instruments used in the surgery. It was all there. But Thirumal Rao had no idea that anything had been done on him. There were even stitches on his stomach, but he never knew. Never felt any pain, never felt anything. That is how Bhagwan gave rebirth to Thirumal Rao before the inauguration ceremony. This devotee who had toiled for the mandir construction. The mandir was very small with a veranda in front and a room on either side with a hall. It could accommodate only 50 people. This was later expanded and what you have now is the Pedda Venkaparaju Kalyana Mandapam. The old mandir has been converted into a Kalyana Mandapam. But in the initial years, it was a very, very small temple. On the western side of the hall, the idols of Shirdi Sai and Parthi Sai were installed. There were pictures of different deities hung on the walls. Across the hall, there was a veranda with two rooms on either side. There was a small washroom behind the hall. And one had to cross the hall to go to the backyard and to the washroom. The atmosphere was quite very peaceful. There were no houses around. Bhagwan's living room was a very small room. There was no privacy for Bhagwan. If he came out of the room, all were around him. And who is the one who was every day doing puja in the shrine there in the old mandir? It was Swami himself. He would do the puja. He would clean the shrine. He would decorate the pictures and the idols with garlands, with sandalwood paste, with kumkum. And the devotees say, as he would do this, he would always say these four things. Bear all, do nothing. Hear all, say nothing. Give all, take nothing, serve all, be nothing. This is Bhagwan's message way back in December 1945. And to me, this just rings within me. As I read the Bhagavad Gita shloka, that the Lord does not have to do anything. There is nothing and nobody in the three worlds or the 14 worlds who can ask the divine to do something, but the divine does. And how does he do it? Bear all, do nothing, hear all, say nothing, give all, take nothing, serve all, be nothing. And he showed us how to lead such a life. He would sit on a small granite slab on which Om was inscribed and he would sit facing the shrine. He would lead the bhajans. Bhagwan's sisters Venkamma and others would join in the chorus. At the end of the bhajans, Swami himself would break the coconuts. He would collect the water in a vessel. He would sprinkle it on all those who were present. And in the end, he would perform the aarti too. And after the aarti, he would personally distribute prasadam, the coconut scrapings mixed with sugar. And then he would grant interview to every individual present there. Either individual interview or a group interview. This is how Bhagwan showed us. When the Supreme Consciousness chose to don a human frame, he too worked. He too was toiling day and night. He too went through much more than what you and I go through. Even though there's absolutely no obligation, no reason why he should do it. But he did. He persevered. Whatever Bhagwan built it was through sheer perseverance, patience, purity, as Bhagwan used to say always. So in this segment, through the voice of the Bhakta, Bhagwan is telling how Krishna told Arjuna, even I do karma. And so, how can you withdraw from doing action? If you withdraw, how can you realize any result? How can you enjoy, how can you experience any result of your karma? In the Gita Vahini, Swami says, everyone has to bow to the demands of nature and engage in action. It is inevitable. Krishna said, do the action that is your bounden duty. Be engaged in action. If you desist from action, the task of living itself will become difficult, nay, impossible. Actions that don't bind by attachment to consequence are referred to as sacrifices or yajna. So which is the action that will bind us and which is the action that will liberate us? Actions that are performed as sacrifice will not lead us to bondage. All the rest lead to bondage. And that is the reason why Krishna was telling Arjuna, give up all attachment and engage in each act as a sacrifice dedicated to the Lord. In fact, Krishna taught Arjuna the origins of action, the roots from which the urge to do action sprouts and grows. Lord Krishna told Arjuna, the Vedas emanated from God. Actions emanated from the Vedas, because the Vedas have dictated to us what we should do. And Bhagwan says, from action originated sacrifice. From action originated the sacrifice, the yajnas. And from sacrifice came rain. From rain grew food. And from food came all living beings. This is the cycle of nature. One has to accept and honor, Swami says. And after saying this to Arjuna, Krishna says, consider this, Arjuna, I don't need to do any action. No, not anywhere in the three worlds. I am under no compulsion, yet I am ever engaged in action. Think of this. If I desist, the world will be no more. And that is the reason why. Have steady faith. And dedicate all your acts to me with no desire for the fruit thereof, no ego, no sense of position or pride. Pick up your bow and do your act. If the wheel of creation is to move smoothly, each one has to do their action, whoever one may be. One cannot get around this obligation. Even if one has become a jnani, even if one has become a self-realized soul, he too has to observe this rule. Swami says, you derive benefit from the world and from the community. So some activity on your part is absolutely due. Every human being is a limb in this creation. And the limb is allotted a task in accordance with its structure, and it must find fulfillment in doing that particular work. Whatever work one has been allotted to be done, it has to be done as an offering to God. There is no single thing in the universe that does not engage itself in this great task. Swami says, plant and insect, stone and stump, wind and rain, heat and cold, each of these, if they did not work as per the plan, then the world will not subsist. The sun and moon carry on their routine task. Wind and fire perform their duties. If the earth and sun refuse to do their allotted duties, what would happen to the world? Swami says, you may wonder why realized souls also should do action. Well, Swami says, people usually follow the ideal set by those who are at the higher levels. So the realized souls also should work, because their acts form the basis of dharma. If the realized souls are inactive, how can ordinary mortals be inspired to work? How can they save themselves? How will they have a guide? Whom will they look up to? They will just lose themselves in the easy paths of sensory pleasure. The duty of the wise is to foster the right and to practice it before others so that they too may be prompted to follow that path, drawn by the hope of becoming a contented person, a joyful person, a wise person. The wise have to do and get done. They have to see, they have to show, so that the rest might be persuaded to follow the example set by them. And Krishna says, Arjuna, think of this fact. How warm is your body now? It's about 98 degrees. How did that happen? Because the sun bears many, many million times this heat at a far distance. Now, if the sun feels that it will not put up with this fire and heat and becomes cool, what will happen to humanity? And in the same way, Krishna says, imagine what will be the fate of this vast universe if I similarly desist from action. That's why I am always engaged in action. Not that I derive any profit thereby, or I get any good out of it or any fruit out of it. Everyone is bound by action, and people are so immersed in ignorance that they are unaware of their own moral and intellectual status and of the secrets of action. And because they can be inspired by the example of the great, the wise have to act. The wise have to be engaged in activity. They have to remove the sloth and delusion of ordinary people. All have to obey the rule of karma without deviation. If there is a plane flying in the sky, those who want to get into the plane cannot jump and get into the plane. They have to wait for the plane to come down and then get in and soar high into the sky. The wise people, similarly, they have to come down into the region of the ordinary people and take these people and raise them to heights of spiritual understanding and wisdom. And that is the reason why Janaka also acted. That is the reason why Ashwapati also acted. And then Krishna tells Arjuna, Bhagavan has written all this in Gita Vahini. Krishna says, desire is the root cause of all evil. And Krishna elaborated on the nature of desire, the cause and the cure. Krishna says, those who are bound by the false idea that they are just this body and nothing more can never hope to conquer action. Who can conquer action? If you think you are the body, you can never conquer action. You'll be bound by the action. More and more you'll get enmeshed in action and its consequences. The only way to come out of this is to acquire the awareness that you are not the body, you are Brahman. Then you are on the path to victory. And that is the reason why all acts must be performed in the spirit of dedication to the Lord. The universe must be identified with the form of Vishnu. The universe should be only thought of as the Virata Swarupa, the cosmic form of the universal transcendent. Very clearly Bhagavan says, these are the three cardinal principles. Everyone has to do action. There is no excuse for anyone. And the people who are evolved, the action of the great is important because they set the ideal. And it is perhaps for this reason that every time the divine came in a human form, the divine was showing us how we should perform action. To inspire the wise, to inspire the lay people, to inspire those who are interested in their salvation. And for those who are not interested, to put them onto the path. And that is what Bhagwan is telling in this initial part of this segment. Karma is Purusha Lakshana. Karma is the hallmark of men. So the devotee and the bhakta cannot say that what is the point acting if everything is destined? Should I act? Should I actually do anything? Because anyway, our lives are all governed by whatever is written even before we took birth. And that is how here Bhagwan completely refutes this understanding and says, if you have that kind of an attitude, then whatever was supposed to even come to you will not come to you. Everything, you will ruin whatever was even due to you. And it is primordial that every person should act, and how you should act. Act in a manner that everything that you do becomes an offering to the divine. No matter who you are, no matter what your status is, no matter how affluent you are or poor you are, how knowledgeable you are or how ignorant you are, there is no escape from engaging in sacred action. And to demonstrate this to us, Krishna acted, and to reiterate this to us, we had Sai Krishna in the Satya Sai Avatar demonstrating to us how we should all the time stretch ourselves to feel one with the other. And as Bhagwan said, Sai is all the time ready to help at all times. I think that is what we should imbibe, that is what we should internalize. I'm really grateful to Bhagwan that we discussed about this episode of the inauguration of Bhagwan's first mandir, which happened in this month, way back in 1945. Let us take inspiration from this episode and ensure that everything we do becomes sacred. Let us take inspiration from what Bhagwan used to continuously say, even as he acted, even as he worked, even as he did every little thing that Bhagwan asked us to do. If Swami asked us to do bhajans, he himself did. If Swami asked us to do Nagar Sankirtan, he himself did. If Swami asked us to do Seva, he himself did. If Swami asked us to do Namasmarana, he himself did. There is nothing that Swami asked us to do which he himself did not do. And the only thing that he used to say, bear all, do nothing, hear all, say nothing, give all, take nothing, serve all, be nothing. Let us make this the motto of our life and be engaged in actions that become sacred offerings to the divine. We'll continue this. There is so much more to ruminate in this segment. We'll pray to Bhagwan to guide us so that every time we read the Vahinis, every time we contemplate on these Vahinis, we become a little more energized to walk on this path. There is some transformation in us, filling us with added zeal to make our life a yajna, a sacrifice to Him. As always, dear listeners, if you have any queries, please feel free to write to us. You can write to listener@radiosai.org. You can also send your comments to our WhatsApp number 9393258258. I offer this little endeavor at His lotus feet, and dear listeners, let us together walk on this journey with joy in our hearts and smile in our lips and happiness bubbling in our being. Thank you so much. Sai Ram.